Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We're here to continue our discussion of the offense against the Buffalo Bills, one of the really fun games to watch in quite some time. Here to join me to do that is Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how are you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Really appreciated the first episode. A lot of great points by Jason. A lot of things about the screen game we talked about. Maybe some secret sauce that is there for Justice Hill getting better opportunities in the screen game, which certainly paid off in this one. We talked about Derrick Henry, of course, because how are we not going to talk about Derrick Henry? The possibility, Lamar's performance certainly was front and center in terms of how he did relative to his opportunity set, and it was generally pretty good. So there's some good stuff to listen to there. Hardly a lot of bad stuff to talk about it too. The only thing is maybe the penalties we're still concerned about. It's not good to have another 41 net penalty yards, but Jason and I have a really good discussion. I know it's a good discussion because I'm enjoying the hell out of it. So if you guys don't, I'll be surprised, but I would still want to have this discussion anyway with Jason because I just enjoy talking football with him and the way we get it.
That was a really fun show, though. And, you know, quite frankly, we deserved a good game to talk about. It was a lot of positives. Isaiah Likely, Pat Ricard played out of his mind. The skill set of Derrick Henry and the comparisons to Nolan Ryan. So yeah, a lot of great stuff on that first show.
Okay. Well, really appreciate you doing it. So we'll start off with the offensive line in the second part of the show here. Do you want to lead us through that?
Sure. Let's talk about, the offensive line in general. Wet night there in Baltimore, Ken. I'm not sure what it was like out there on the field. We saw some misty stuff, rainy day. What do you have on the field conditions?
Yeah, the field conditions definitely were an impairment to the offensive line. It's very visible. I mean, there's a lot of slips by the offensive line and some unforced slips. And that I think that reduced scores. If I had to guess, by 2 to 4 points per player, maybe even slightly more in some cases, there was definitely evidence of that. There was fewer blocks missed at the line of scrimmage and more blocks missed in level two. Now, a part of the function of that is that they're asking the players to do much harder blocks when they ask them to make, say, screen blocks. And my way of scoring a screen block is if they do something to contribute to the quarterback not being pressured immediately at the line of scrimmage, they'll get credit for the block. But if they go to level two, then they can get a level two block as well, and that'll figure into their subjective adjustment potentially. Right. But sometimes they just release immediately into level two, which means if you do that, you really got to make a block in level two. And that's hard to do in space for alignment. It just is a difficult proposition. So it creates a somewhat more difficult set of blocks. And while the screen blocking was excellent, and I think that, generally speaking, they did a great job of creating yards, that doesn't mean you're converting at the same kind of rate you do when your opponent is directly across from you at the line of scrimmage.
Absolutely. And your level of opponent has a lot to do with that. I mean, Patrick Queen, for example, on the Ravens the last couple of years caused a lot of missed blocks. As far as, him just being to the spot, what's to the wall all the time. And whether he missed the tackle or not, he was pretty hard to block in those type of situations. So yes, your opponent has something to do with that in the difficulty of the assignment. Ronnie Stanley.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ronnie. Did you have something to say before we start here?
No. Should I just make a general statement on Ronnie and absolutely. The rest of the guys? And then as we go, the rest of the guys and then just kick it to you. Mm-hmm. Ronnie, I just in general, for me, I had a really good feeling about him coming into the season, and it had to do with him practicing. And there were, I think he was on the lounge and he was in front of the microphone one time, and then I added that to his contract being altered, and all these factors started adding up in my head subconsciously, Ken. And I was just like, you know what? Something is different about Ronnie this year. And I've been really hard on him. Not saying like Ronnie's a bad guy or Ronnie's lazy or Ronnie doesn't want to come back. None of that stuff. Just very doubting and very cynical that Ronnie could ever be the same after that brutal, brutal injury that he, you know, and it's, you know, it's 2020. It's now 2024. But I did get a different feeling from Ronnie this offseason and him practicing and the contract and the attitude. And, you know, I noticed a real chip on his shoulder and like a kind of a, yeah, you guys are going to finally see this year. And overall, he's just been wonderful. It's just been wonderful to have that part of the line locked up for once. And that's just the way I feel. I feel very positive going forward with Ronnie at left tackle.
Yeah, me too. I'll add a little bit of color to what you're saying, because there's probably two, actually, I think there were two times, maybe even three, but there were two times he was definitely at the podium during camp. And the first time he was a long time doing his post practice routine to build up his body and recover from the thing. And then they finally just called off the interview because it had been too long. Then he was up on the up at the podium again. It was, you know, I forget if it was a day later or a week later, but it doesn't really matter how much longer it was. Same thing happened. Okay, so he literally took 30 minutes to get to the podium. All but four people had gone. I really wanted to be there in the interview, so I was still there. Ryan Mink was still there because, hey, he works for the Ravens. And two other guys, Jonah Schaefer, and I'm forgetting who the fourth was, and I really should remember. But that was a really cool interview. I'll tell you that Ronnie said a lot of things about how he's played extremely self-effacing, not happy with his own level of play.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, you know. And it wasn't just like in the past it would say, I'm confident, I'll get back to the next level. And it was kind of robotic and he was trying to speak it into existence.
Good point.
But yeah, go ahead, Ken. I sense that.
Yeah, it's exactly what you're talking about is a great way to characterize it, I think. And I heard a more honest player who realized that, you know, this, he was really getting an opportunity this year to play for the Ravens. Or he calls it that. I mean, a lot of players, they want to make sure that you know how grateful they are to be in the league at all as kind of a baseline. Brent Urban always talks about that. You know, it's a privilege to play in this league, you know, and other people, you know, even they're playing through the bet minimum. They're in survival mode. You know, in terms of, do I get one more year? Do I get two more years kind of thing? They're not, you know, there's not a big contract in their future, but they still give you great sound bites at the podium. They give you a great feeling. And I got that from Ronnie. And Ronnie, I wouldn't call him an entitled player, but his expectations of himself were very high, I thought, before this. And now it's more like, I need to make sure I deliver on this to extend my career. That's exactly where he is. He's at crossroads of his career. And through four games, it certainly looks like he's got more football to play.
It does. Very impressive. Is this where we move on, Ken? Just trying to get in the groove.
I'll go through his blocks real quickly in terms of what he did. So 54 plays, 44 blocks. The big thing about Ronnie, 8 missed blocks in this game. He had some slipping on the field that he did. Only 2 of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. Now, that's a very big thing, is what percentage of your blocks are losses to the man opposite you at the line of scrimmage, and that wasn't bad for Ronnie. One pressure, I did charge him with 1/3 of the 1 yard sack. It was a complex situation where McCary kind of got beat. I gave him a 6th. I gave Stanley a 1/3 of it. And I'm sorry. Yes, I gave McCary a 6th. I gave Stanley a 1/3. And the other thing was the spy came downhill and took Lamar down basically at the line of scrimmage. Easily could have been a 1 yard run or a loss. And so it's kind of a, you're letting your quarterback get hit maybe, or increasing the chance. I didn't feel like it should all go to the offensive line. Unblocked spy ended up being the guy who converted the play. So, you know, some people might consider that unfair scoring. I did what I did, and I'm fairly comfortable with how I divided out the responsibility for it. But that was, you know, one of the plays. He had one pressure allowed, as I mentioned, and he had a false start penalty. And I don't know that I've told you about this, but I changed the penalty scoring a little bit in my system this year. It's now -2 per 5 yards, plus an additional -1 if the penalty is declinable. Okay. So that's a big distinction. And we had, of course, one of those for Fa'alele in the game. Anyway, a base score was 0.70 for Stanley. I think he is one of the players who the requests of him in level 2 were difficult for him to score well on. So he made five blocks in level two, which is certainly pretty good for a tackle in a single football game. But he also missed roughly that number, five or six in level two, by the combination of slipping or not being able to find a block when he got there. So not an easy night in terms of that. I don't think the score reflects poorly on him at all. I mean, obviously the team ran for a lot of yards. I think he generally converted a fair number of his blocks in this case, had two pancakes, made his only pull, had a really nice highlight block where he delivered, I think it was a pancake after, yeah, pancake in level two, which is always real nice on a 14-yard run. I think that, I'm sorry, it's 14-yard pass to Hill, I believe, towards the end of that first drive. But anyway, a good game for Ronnie, and I think grade-wise, if anything, the system maybe let him down a little bit in terms of the score, but that's okay. I'm looking at it qualitatively, I'd call it a good game.
So moving on to left guard, Pat McCary getting the start was some discussion. I mean, maybe some people in the flock knew. The reporters knew who was in line to start at left guard. I thought it might be Josh Jones. I thought that they might rotate McCary with Rosengarten again, but they decided to give McCary his first start at left guard. Now completing the gauntlet and starting every position on the offensive line in his career. What did you think about his performance?
Yeah, I mean, he fairly good, fairly similar to Stanley in a variety of ways. He did have a holding call, which, you know, that holds your grade down. There's nothing, that's your fault. You know, and we talked about this in the first episode, but I don't think there were a lot of penalties in this game where the Ravens can say they really got the shaft on like they had in the first three games of the season. They were minus 41 yards, and they deserve to be about minus 41 yards of net penalties in this game. McCary missed three blocks, allowed half a penetration, a third of a pressure, a sixth of a sack, and an offensive holding, that's minus five of his points. That's the bulk of his deductions. Ended up at 0.79 after adjustment, which is a C. Five blocks in level two, that's fine. He had 5 of 8 on pulls, which isn't particularly good, but he also, that holding call occurred on a pull. So he really, the night was pretty bad from a pulling perspective for him. So that would be my one beef about what was going on, his mobility did not really look that good. But, you know, he was the star in terms of not missing blocks in this game, as particularly the guy opposite him. I think one of his three missed blocks. Yeah, only one was a loss at the line of scrimmage.
I would say overall I was impressed with McCary because my expectations of him at guard were kind of low. So it's not saying that, you know, he was our best lineman or, you know, definitely the penalty was bad. But when I look at McCary, I would say if you want your best, he would grade out best if he was playing center, I think.
Yeah,
I think that when he gets a little bit of help, we play center regularly. His body is built for that. He can handle that. Guard, he's a little bit of a tweener. In tackle, he's a little bit of a tweener. It's not that he can't have good games. He's had good games, but he also has overmatched. So I thought first start at left guard, spot start. My expectations were like people were like, oh, McCary is going to be better than Voorhees. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I really see him as a guard, Ken. I put up a cut up of Josh Jones. I posted that to Twitter. Not sure if you saw that. That came across your timeline, but I did that last this summer when we got Josh Jones. And he started week one versus us.
That's right.
When Texas came to town.
23.
Yeah. Right. And he started at left guard, and then they had more injuries across the line. So Josh Jones moved to right tackle in that game for the Texans. And he had some good tape on there if you guys want to check it out on the channel. You know, obviously we had Matabike in there. He was facing some good competition. But what I'm kicking it to you on, Ken, is that I feel like they're holding Josh Jones out now to be that backup left tackle to Ronnie. Good. And McCary can, like, they feel like, hey, if McCary gets hurt at left guard, we're okay because we got Roger. And if two guys go down, we still have Josh Jones. So maybe having Josh Jones on this team is allowing McCary to be McCary instead of just being the backup left tackle.
Well, that's certainly a valid argument. You know, you've got a rookie at right tackle that they're not sure about his performance yet, even though the first data point's pretty good, just to spoil it a little bit before you get there. You got a veteran at left tackle who's had injury issues in his career, and I don't know how much risk there is of some sort of a recurrence, but he's an older player now, so there is some risk of that going down again. What I really don't want to see is a repeat of the Tyree Phillips domino that basically – flipped over a bunch of other dominoes in 2021. So you had Tyree Phillips get hurt playing guard. You had Stanley coincidentally getting hurt at left tackle, and you end up with Alejandro Villanueva moving over to left tackle, and you're just, your season is over. It was destroyed by that fact. They stayed, they used smoke and mirrors to stay in the race until Lamar got hurt, but they were not a particularly good football team during that time. And that was frustrating. If you've got two backup tackles and two guys you kind of trust to play at probably a slightly below the league average level, but still a above the replacement level. Okay, so I'm making that distinction. So I think McCary could play at a C-minus level pretty much, and a C equivalent to the league average, we'll call it. Probably a D-minus, that border is where I would consider the replacement level.
Right, and so he's better than your average backup.
Yeah.
Replacement tackle, but he's not, you know, starter quality.
Right. I think the McCary trump card is too valuable to play anywhere but at tackle. I think they've got guys who can play center. Might be Ben Cleveland, might be Nick Samak, but they've got guys who can play center. I think, you know, there obviously is some disconnect at guard on Cleveland. We're looking at an iceberg, and we can only see the tip of it, which is basically his play the last several years when he's been on the field.
Yeah, we can't see what's down there, but we damn sure know something's down there at this point.
Yeah.
I thought that it was great sign this week that Harbaugh went out of his way to mention Ben Cleveland unprompted, saying that he had a great week of practice and his time is coming, paraphrasing him. But just like he threw him under the bus last week, he picked him back up this week, which I thought was a good sign because, we've seen the tape. Ben Cleveland has been good when he's been on the field. And he's got better feet than people think. He's more mobile than people think. You don't believe me? Go ahead and check out some of the highlights and cut-ups I have of Ben on the channel, specifically his 2023 highlights, which basically consisted of two games.
Two games, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, and you're watching him move his feet, pick up stunts. The man is not a giant oaf of a human being. Ben Cleveland can play. So, sorry about that.
No, I'd certainly like to see it. I think the two games last year, the previous play in his career, the general trajectory of his play, again, that's enough of a background for me to say, I think he's earned the right to fail. I thought, by the way, that's exactly was my position on Ryan Jensen when he got moved to center. He's earned the right to fail, which basically means you've earned the right to fail over several games. Okay. Not one game that you're not going to put him in once. You're not going to pull him immediately, but it means you've earned the right to have a chance to get the starting job and to fail over the course of maybe say 3 to 4 games.
Look, if Ben Powers and John Simpson can net us a comp pick, you best believe that you play Ben Cleveland, you get that comp pick. So there's something going on below the surface for sure.
We have in the Ravens history, the big example of a guy who was totally doghoused and then came back to actually be useful to the Ravens is Bryant McKinney. Now, we're not going to claim that Bryant McKinney was great, but Bryant McKinney was a guy that we made a three-way switcheroo on at the beginning of the 2012 playoff run. McKinney to left tackle or to right tackle, or had been terrible at left tackle. And he replaced Osemele, who had been okay at right tackle, but was fantastic at left guard during the playoff run.
Yep.
And that really netted the team quite a bit. And that was a shame. I guess the player who was out was Ramon Harwood.
It was a brilliant move. It pretty much won us the Super Bowl. We needed everything, every little bit of it. And McKinney was great. Yeah. But McCary, not a perfect game. I think he's better than he showed on pulls for the most part whenever he's been asked to pull in the past. Mobility is one of his strengths. So I like a mobile left guard. I liked what he saw. I feel like if Voorhees has to miss another week, we'll find out the practice reports tomorrow that McCary will be pretty good at left guard.
Do you take the comment by Harbaugh to be indicative that opportunity really is coming for Cleveland because they know more about Voorhees' situation now?
Could be. I just thought it was weird that he decided to call him. Like, either he felt bad about it and figured he might, that's not fair. I made a mistake. I need to give Cleveland credit. Or maybe, like you're saying, Voorhees is going to be on the shelf for a while. They want to give Cleveland a chance. And just One more note on Cleveland. They threw the man at center in preseason on short notice against Philadelphia's first team defense, two top of the first round picks, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter in there. And he just blocked the hell out of him. Yeah. I mean, it's just, he's just a natural football player.
It's you can't teach his size, and it's just, it is really nice. And you have a player like Linderbaum at center, complete finesse player, great at getting up to level two. You want to put him in a position to be able to do the things he does really well. Holding the back end of a double team while he can do it is not really what is going to benefit the Ravens to the most part. Having two behemoths next to him really could benefit a player like Linderbaum in terms of getting, squeezing the most value out of him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how did McCary score? Did you give us that?
He scored a C for the game, 75 on the base. I gave him an adjustment with that. And so he worked out to 0.79. I know a lot of people would say that's the top end of the C range. It's actually guard. That's a little lower than the top end of the C range, but it's still solidly in the C range.
Very good. So should we move on to the center?
Sure.
Tyler Linderbaum. It seems more of the same for him. He had some injuries, banged up last week before the game. Didn't notice any lingering effects. Seems like, he's a pretty steady player. He's going to get beat from time to time. You see it, but you also see the dominance from Tyler Linderbaum. And with so much uncertainty on the line, I feel really good about Ronnie. I feel really good about Linderbaum.
Yeah, those are the players who, they have to build the line around and really maximize their play, maximize the leadership they give you. Linderbaum, I'm sure people saw a lot of the highlights, a lot of the highlight clips that were thrown out. And he was a big part of the level two blocking, getting out in front of screens, getting out there with Henry. On the one Henry run, he had a great one upper two PC star is how we would score it. It's a one because he got credit for the block. It's a PC because he pancaked the guy in level two. And then he got a star for it being a highlight block. And Mink put that highlight up. I saw him. And then he doesn't even watch the run. He just walks back towards where he thought the huddle was going to be.
Yep.
And he has this back to Henry as he goes down at about the 2 yard line. I don't think he actually got it in the end zone.
By the way, that's kind of rare for Linderbaum because he is usually like, when Lamar got hit out of bounds last week, whenever there's something questionable, it's Linderbaum.
Yeah.
Is the guy on the pile. He's the guy with the attitude. He's the guy with that protector mentality. You say like, where are the dogs? Where are the leaders? That kind of thing. Well, Linderbaum's usually the guy right there in the mix, making sure nobody piles on his guy at the end of the run. So that was kind of funny. He pulled like an alpha move. Yeah, I did my job. That's right. Let's walk back. Yeah, it was funny.
That's Ryan Jensen. What he did when Flacco went down that Miami game a few years ago. Who did he absolutely deck out? I want to say it was Milano, but I don't think it was.
Kiko. It was Kiko Alonso. Kiko
Alonso.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That was a fun one. Okay, so let's get to Linderbaum's scoring, which is a little bit less impressive maybe than people might think. 54 plays, 45 blocks. He missed six. Three of those were losses at the line of scrimmage. He's probably had a little bit of difficulty pass blocking. In this game, he actually also had a little bit of difficulty getting his face crossed on run blocks. So he had two penetrations that he allowed where, I don't know if it's Henry both times, but I think it was, got taken down for a loss. He gave up only one third of a pressure. So Lamar had the ball out quickly on some of the plays where he was getting beat. It ended up being 0.75, which isn't really good at center. I gave him a big adjustment because he had 10 blocks in level two in this game. And so he got a C for the game. It's not Linderbaum's best game. I don't think he would claim it was his best game. And it had the kind of a tough combination of, while he had a lot of highlights, he also had some tough beats in terms of the pass and run game. Two pancakes in the game, though, three out of four on pulls, and he had that highlight block that I mentioned on the run by Henry.
Really fun player. Really fun player. At right guard, Falele. I've had so many thoughts about Daniel. It's like we could do a whole an hour show on this. But curious what you thought in this game. For me, I felt like Monken is, if for the most part here, has seems like he's ditched some run plays because of Falele.
Some zone stuff you're probably going to say.
Zone stuff to the right. We even saw there's a clip going around. If you remember the play that Ricard ended up getting kneed in the face. by Smoot. That was a result of Falele's pull getting cut off extremely short. So Henry had to change direction. But Pat Ricard couldn't climb up and get, I believe the safety was in line to get blocked. Ricard had to help Falele to clear some of that room. So eliminating the stuff that Falele is, you know, physically can't, you know, do, and asking him to down block the first play is a good example of that. Hey, how are we going to block this three tech? Well, we're going to ask Ricard to come down and trap block him. We're not going to ask Falele to reach. So learning what they can and can't do with Falele, who will always have his limitations as far as his size and, you know, just getting out of the stance quickly. They're finding a way to run the ball to both sides now, which I thought was great. And I say all that, and it sounds very harsh for Falele. These are two not so good fronts against the run, but Falele himself deserves a lot of credit for, you know, keeping his head down and trying to keep getting better. I don't think that it's his fault. I think he's a tackle at heart. You know, things happen fast in the inside. But I want to give him all the credit in the world for the way that he's worked.
Yeah. I obviously that's one of the reasons why the coaches love him, is just he's really worked very hard. This game, he missed 9 blocks, and I'm going to get into that in a little bit, but he also only made 2 blocks in level 2, and he was out there a lot. And it's mobility is not really his thing. It's too bad, because he just had a game against Dallas where he had 11 blocks in level 2.
They were running into him. Those Dallas linebackers were awful. I mean, like climb at level 2. It was more like level 1.5.
That's cool. I mean, that's a usage thing. If it's level 1.5, he's basically moving up half a level to hit the scraping linebacker.
Yes.
And yeah, you will run into a brick wall if you run into Falele. More like a brick is not even the right term. I don't know what would be heavier than that, but those bricks they make the pyramids out of, maybe.
Right.
Anyway, for Falele, a few other things about his game. 9 missed blocks. Let me just look here really quickly. Only one of those was a loss at the line of scrimmage. So most of the time, he's trying to get out there on level 2, help on some of these screens, help on some of these run plays, and he just wasn't finding anybody. He made 2 blocks in level 2. So effectively, he had some missed pulls. He had 1 missed pull, and he had 7 other blocks where he's in level 2 out of 9 times and couldn't find a block. So that's a tough usage concern. There's maybe a little bit of slipping. I don't think in his case that was the primary thing. He had the IDP penalty. That's a really bad one. A false start's a -2. IDP is a -3 because it's declinable. So he had that 0.73 per play overall. And then with an adjustment, he's still in the C range, barely. But in his case, that's you know, honestly, if we could have a C for the entire year for Daniel Falele, I'm signing up for that right now.
Me too.
Andrew Voorhees as well, by the way, if that could be done.
I don't like to be harsh, and I think that fans misconstrue what I'm trying to say about Falele. I'm not really even that concerned in the pass game. I'm sure there's concern, but what I'm mostly concerned is you have this running back we talked extensively in the first show, who can execute every type of run with patience and vision, and then be able to finish. And then we have a right guard that, you know, has problems climbing and pulling, and it's not for any of his. It's not fixable. Like he's just physically not built to be able to get out of the stance quickly and move that quickly. So if the time comes, where Ben gets his shot, I think that we'll be a much more dynamic. Munkin will have more options in the run game, more run plays he can call, and not have to get so creative. And because, you know, again, I think that between Dallas's linebackers and Buffalo's linebackers, those might be
2 of the weaker groups.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I don't want to go too far into Falele because there's so many technical things that are still short of the mark, and it's not the foot speed. There is really nothing you can do about it. I do think that there are pacing in zone that he doesn't really have to take away a lot of those plays, because I don't think you run at full speed. You're not running a 40 when you run in zone, but
it's more like him getting up out of his stance and the other guy already being in his chest.
And well, that's probably true. And one of the reasons there is a hand usage thing that Falele is still way off the way below the aging curve in terms of how he's developed that. So I, anyway, multiple issues, but you know, Falele, all I'm going to say is if you do the kind of work that either Jason or I do, and we have a slightly different angle on this, I'm more of a modeling scoring systems to try and determine things. And Jason is trying to find common threads in film that he sees. I trust you with how you're reviewing film, where I don't trust everybody. Okay.
Right.
I think there's a lot of narrative builders out there in terms of film who aren't
cherry pick.
About, yeah, aren't going about the problem the right way. The thing should be is you should be excited to be surprised by the results you're collecting every week. Instead of saying, I want to make sure my thing from last week is right. So he's gonna have this.
Yeah, and I see that there's cherry picking of plays, 60 plays in the game. Let me find these three that prove my narrative. Yeah. But yes, I like being wrong, because I learned something and then usually it's for the better. You know, usually when I'm wrong, it's because I doubt a guy and he shows up in a big way. Now, the one guy I was high on in the draft was Roger Rosengarten. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I split on this. What did you think of his first start? Looked pretty darn good to me, actually.
Yeah, I honestly terrific. If you could get this out of a first NFL start, you'd be thrilled to death. 54 plays, 47 blocks. He did miss six. And let me just go down because we wrote the article already, which means I've got this, but I didn't put it. He had two losses at the line of scrimmage out of six, so no problem there. Certainly not for a tackle where they tend to get beat more. Allowed one pressure the entire game. That's terrific. And remember, he's up against Von Miller for a fair number of snaps in that
game. Right, and Russo's no joke either.
Russo's no joke. They have decent outside pass rushers. Honestly, Epinesa is not bad. He's usually on the other side, but
yes,
not bad.
Right.
I did have one holding call, which was the real downer in what he did. That stalled a drive. We mentioned this, I think, in the first show, but it was a drive where Lamar fumbled on the next play. So it's probably a little bit tough to call it a stalled drive, but then Lamar might not have. You know, if Lamar's not Lamar, he probably doesn't run for all those yards. And then you of course, have to take some.
Absolutely. That's kind of our bailout play, I believe, yeah. Ken. It's a second and 20. It's going to be like a Lamar draw.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if it's fourth and three, you know, the ball's not leaving Lamar's hand.
Yeah. Quarterback power off
him. Yeah. I've kind of noticed that with Monken. If we're behind the chains because of a holding, that next play or maybe the play after, maybe it's the second down. It's going to be Lamar keeping in a draw to get some cheap, cheap 10.
They've got, adding the Hill screen to that. And Hill has been the master of third down and conversions this year, just of throwing a screen pass on third down, which is usually a losing proposition. When I see the opponents do it, that's usually a good thing that they're Hamilton or somebody else is going to blow that thing up and they're going to come up short of the sticks on third and 10. If you try and screen the ball, Hill's just been remarkable with that this year.
Does he look? I think he looks as fast as ever, but I think he looks stronger and more explosive.
Again, I think I don't disagree with any of that you might be observing. I think most of it is his vision of the field is improved.
You think he's seeing it better?
And I think the vision is improved in part because of the freedom from the chip and set blocks, but he was already doing a good job with the screen pass even before this week. This week is just an outlier type performance.
Because I think part of it too, I brought this up with Yuri last week, is I think that he knows himself better because vision's mm-hmm. never been his thing. Right. It's just been a weakness of his or something that needs developing. But I think now that he feels comfortable in his role, he's got three contracts already. He is like a less of a need to move up in the pecking order, less of a need to prove himself. Maybe he's not pressing as much, but he looks more like efficient in his movements, almost more powerful and just as fast. Maybe that is a product of him, being more comfortable and, him being better, a better running back, quote unquote, not a better athlete. But aside on Justice Hill, just super out, Ken.
Yeah. Let me finish it up with Rosengarten if I can here. So he got a 0.74 also. So every single lineman scored between 0.70 and 0.75 in terms of their base score. But he got a big adjustment because of Von Miller, and also the requirements for tackle are lower to score grade-wise. And so his 0.81 adjusted ended up being a B. Three blocks in level two, one pancake, one out of two on pulls. I just, obviously if you could get that from a rookie right tackle, you sign for it on blood. And I think also – The door is now open for him to be the left tackle in 2025. So we're going to look at, you know, how this develops. It does look, you know, through four data points that he's probably the better choice over Suamataia, who is, I think he might have been benched.
He was benched for Wanya Morris, yeah.
But he also is, Kingsley is playing at left tackle and Rosengart's playing at right tackle. So there's a little bit of difference there.
I think Kingsley is a right tackle. Roger, to me, profiles more as a left tackle. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because maybe he develops in the run game and he's done well in the run game so far. But personally, I thought he was a better pass blocker than he is a run blocker. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Kingsley's feet and his ability to move was obviously not up to Rodgers level, that he might be the guy that needs a tight end on his side from time to time and that kind of thing. And that will be okay for Kingsley. But yeah, Rosengarten, what's Ronnie's, he's got a void year next year at 8.1. Ken, you have any opinion on, what's happening with Ronnie?
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Money next year?
I mean, well, like, what's the percentage chance they re-sign him?
Yeah, like, I'm still kind of new to the void years, and this is a question just for you. Maybe the audience has the same question.
Yeah, there is a there is somebody who – are you looking at Film Study Mailbag? Because there was somebody who asked exactly this question. Like, what's the chance of Ronnie coming
back? No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
Let me make sure we credit the question properly, and I'll do it when you're next on the soapbox here, and I'll take a
look. Go ahead. Yeah, no, I'm finished with Rosengarten.
But in terms of the chance of Stanley coming back, let's address that right now. I'm maybe put it around 25% right now, and I forgot about the void year, so maybe that number is even a little bit too low. Maybe it's 30 or 35. I just think the problem is the landing strip for where you get Ronnie is pretty short. He either has to get a little bit hurt or he has to play a little bit less well than he is right now. Because if he does play this well for the whole season and people look through the early season crap penalties, the holding, the three intentional illegal formations that he was flagged with, people are going to realize this is a hell of a left tackle. And somebody is going to take the chance on paying him a lot of money. Now, if the whole league says we're too concerned about the injury risk with him, given his history here, then I think, you know, he could come back to the Ravens on that scenario as well. It's going to be costly, and the Ravens have a lot of players they have to sign this offseason. So Isaiah Likely, they've got to start thinking about him. Linderbaum is really on the block this time because a year from now, you won't really be able to afford the fifth-year option on him.
And Kyle.
Kyle, you're going to give the fifth-year option. I actually think you have an extra year. Okay. Linderbaum, you can't afford the fifth-year option because he's grouped in with all other linemen. So in order to save money, you have to sign him this year. You have to sign him.
You can't pay a center top five tackle money.
Exactly. And let's toss the rest on here. Adafi Owe is basically, they got to make a decision on him, and he's playing so great. I would hate to, you know, lose another exciting homegrown talent at that level. And I think Brandon Stevens is already gone. I don't think that's really a question at this point. I think they've actually got his replacement, so I don't think they're too concerned about it. But Stevens has been a solid player. And then there's one other guy that I'm forgetting right now. And it's a top quality player. It's not a question player, who is likely away. Linderbaum, and there's one more. And who am I thinking of? That's a third year player this year. So first opportunity to negotiate is coming up.
2022 then.
So yeah, 20.
That's a Jabo was in.
Oh, Travis Jones.
Yeah.
So there's an enormous name there that you really got to figure out how you're going to pay based on the game. Based on how he's played this year, but the game he just had was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Yeah.
What a player.
So anyway, I'm probably at 25% on re-signing Ronnie. Obviously, of all the players I named, you could certainly make the argument it's the most important position. If they had to, they could find a new center after a fourth year of Linderbaum. They probably can't pay him for that fifth year. Or they might do it anyway, just on the spec that they'll be able to sign him to a long-term deal. But I don't think it would be the right choice, and it honestly would be a tough call on that. The cuts they're going to have to make are going to chew right into bone. It's going to be players like Mark Andrews. It's going to be a decision on Marlon Humphrey. How are you going to cut him after the way he's played this year? He's been unbelievably good. I just the cap situation they're into next year
is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I've seen it. There's no easy savings. There's no names that really jump out. Marlon, I think, is a 12 dead money and a 12 saved. So even that, you're going to eat a lot.
Yeah.
To give away a great player,
to give away a superstar. I mean, there's no way you replace Marlon Humphrey for 12 million, and plus he might be a guy that you could extend and make that cap hit less difficult in 25. Whereas Stanley, you don't have that same savings available because you have a little bit from the void year, but not the same amount of savings as you have in the Humphrey contract.
Yeah. I was looking at the cap, last week, and I was like, oh man, we're tighter than I thought we'd be.
It's going to get pretty tough, but fortunately we got the right guy at quarterback. And we're not Cleveland, but the wrong guy at quarterback and the same similar cap problems. So
that's right.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk some skill position players. And who would you like to talk about?
I want to talk about Andrews. first guy that comes to mind. There will be a game. It might be this week where he's going to be showcased, I believe, Odell Beckham style. Might even be to the detriment of the offense at times. But the Ravens will make a statement. Lamar will make a statement. They will feed Andrews. He will get his. I wonder how much the car accident shook him up, how serious it was, maybe more serious than we know. The leg injury was no joke. He rushed back from it. I'm sure that slowed him down some. He probably wouldn't admit it, but he's doing a good job blocking. And I think that Mark Andrews will get his. Not concerned at all. The drop was obviously terrible. My goodness, Lamar's numbers would have looked even better. But I think Andrews is doing a good job. I have no problem with Kolar replacing him as the quote unquote blocking tight end, the inline tight end more. And I think he's going to be just fine, Ken.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm not really concerned about the 0-for-1. I hope that what he's saying about, he'll get his when the time comes kind of thing. I hope that's really true because, other teams can completely prevent that. And I don't want the Ravens to force the ball to him if he gets the Kansas City treatment from week one, despite the fact that he hasn't really produced this year yet. So, this week, it was a drop. It was the fact that the Ravens were running the ball all the time. Dallas, there were opportunities to throw the ball to him. And I guess he had the big incomplete. Was that against the Raiders or against the Cowboys? It was against the Cowboys, wasn't it, on third down where Lamar missed it?
That was a throw Lamar wouldn't have back for sure.
Yeah. So it's not like they haven't tried anything, but the Chiefs really precluded it with the way they played him defensively. if other teams return to that, they better that means it's not the week to get Andrews involved in the offense in the same way.
No, I don't think that the teams will do that, and so the Ravens really make that the priority. They bracketed them, doubled them. They wanted to make sure Andrews didn't beat them. I think Andrews will have. I'm talking more about he's kind of covered in the end zone type thing. I have a feeling they're going to force him the ball. Excuse me, where they wouldn't have to, just to make a statement. I could see Lamar doing that, like he did with Odell last year.
Yeah, I think we're past the time where this is top secret, but I'm going to still be a little bit obtuse about this. During camp, they were doing something that very clearly led you to believe that they were practicing for Kelce in week one at certain times of practice.
Okay, cool.
All right. And I think if we had been at Chiefs camp doing the same thing, we'd have noticed the exact same thing was going on, and somebody was trying to replicate who Mark Andrews was.
Right.
And they were doing that. So anyway, we're past that game at this point, but it would not surprise me, based on how they played Andrews in that game, that they were highly, highly focused on that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'll take a player. I'm going to go with Rashad Bateman. And he's a guy who is not getting the number of opportunities he wants. He's not getting the number of opportunities he would get in a different offense. It honestly would not surprise me if he asks the Ravens for a trade. Of course, when you're in his situation, you already had to sign a bargain contract, because from his perspective, his agent let him down in terms of not telling him to report to camp. But in a more general situation, he made a big mistake personally in terms of not showing up. He's done some good things for the Ravens. I think it would be the worst thing in the world if he gave up on being the kind of pass blocker he's been over what's happened. But if I was to pick one player on the team who I think could get extremely upset with his usage, it would be him. It wouldn't be Hill or Henry. They're getting all the usage they could possibly want. It wouldn't be Flowers, I don't think, but he might be next on the list. It's not going to be likely, even with a few reduced targets, he still is a central part of the offense. It could be Andrews, except I think he's too mature and understands where he is right now in his career. It won't be Aguilar, because, again, a very mature player who got a good opportunity last year. I think the guy who could be the upset wide receiver, Marquise Brown, a la Marquise Brown, is Bateman, because he does not fit at all.
I'll take a different angle. I think it would be Flowers.
Okay.
And the reason why is that he was high volume guy last year. And Bateman seems so grateful for a $5 million a year contract. Like, Ravens took a chance on me. The Ravens believed in me. And it's like, damn, buddy, like, you really thought that low of yourself, where you're making Nelson Aguilar money, basically. Anyway, I just feel like Bateman was so grateful to get this $5 million a year. Like, people couldn't believe it. Oh, you got $15 million? Oh, $15 million a year? That sounds too high for Bateman.
No, $15 total.
No, nobody. It was $15 million total. So, yeah, it was basically what he was making in the last year of his rookie contract for three more years. So I feel like Bateman is just I feel like Flowers would be more likely.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Flowers is certainly also a first-round draft pick. Since he's been a high-volume guy, I think you've got that right. I don't think he wants his high volume to come in the kind of targets that he's gotten. I don't believe so.
Spamming. I've saw that term, and I think that that's a good spamming them targets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just here, take one. Hey, take one.
Yeah.
Hey, how about Pat Ricard?
Go ahead. Man,
I thought these last 2 weeks were some of the best weeks to showcase Pat Ricard. Mm-hmm. Like, the number of opportunities he got to block and the way he shined in his block. I think he's probably become my favorite fullback, which is high praise in a franchise with a proud litany of fullbacks.
Your Pat favorite Ricard. Fullback of Ravens fullback.
And Ravens fullbacks. Yeah, I apologize.
Pretty much every great fullback of the last 25 years has come through Baltimore at the end of their career anyway.
Man, yeah, but you have different styles, from the Laurent McClain's and the Juice Checks, different type of guys. Your Vontae Leach, he's always been my favorite. Lorenzo Neal. Oh man, you know, and it was a guy back in the day,
Ricard.
Begins with an R, way back in the day. Anyway, I just want to tell you about Ricard. It's just a showcase, a guy that can get under your skin. And I love the fact that he does that. He's just like, it must be a helpless feeling to be locked up by Ricard heading backwards at 5-10 miles an hour, knowing it's not going to end well. Like, I would like to ask Pat Ricard, like, do they ever try to like subtly come to a gentleman's agreement at that point? like not say, hey man, what are you doing? But or like, I don't know, where they give up and be like, let you know, or are they fighting for their lives the whole time?
That would be a great question. Don't ask him to name names, but I bet he'd tell you.
Because like, you know, you just can't help it, but to have that, to see the oh crap moment by the guy that he's got a hold of, and there's just, you know, please don't dump me into the bench type thing, you know, where I could get hurt. But yeah, he's a fun player to watch. His story is great. Watching him pass block is great. Watching him run block is great. Watching him recover a fumble in the end zone was great. Like, he might be my favorite fullback of all time. And whoever you choose, I respect, and I would love that guy too.
I think the R guy you're looking for is Alan Ricard, who blocked for
Alan Ricard. Yes. Yeah,
who blocked for Jamal Lewis's 2003 season.
That's it. Yeah. I think I got messed up because of the Richard. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about, I think we hit on a lot of these other players. I want to talk about Nelson Aguilar briefly. Aguilar is a much higher volume guy last year on a really unexpected basis, but he caught 35 out of 45 balls, which was the best he's done, I think, in his whole career. Terrific year. We learned some things about him that took him from a status of very inconsistent receiver who probably had speed, had, you know, hands problems, had other yards per target issues that were a function mostly of playing with some terrible quarterbacks in New England in recent years. And he's played with some bad quarterbacks in the past as well, but, you know, he also had an issue with drops and had recently been at the top of the league. That went away last year. And then we saw some of the leadership and maturity, especially come out in terms of the peeling off the safety play against the Rams to get the go-ahead touchdown to Flowers. He's a player I really enjoy. I love having him as a number three or four wide receiver on the team. Maybe he's a little bit lower than that as a receiving option on a team with as much talent at skill positions as the Ravens currently have. But this game, he saved an interception from Lamar. It was a ball that was thrown high. He kind of started the tip drill to himself, wasn't able to haul it in cleanly, either with one hand or by tipping it to himself. But it did. He was bracketed on the play. It looked like it would have been an interception had he not gone up for the ball and solidly kind of tipped it to himself or brought it in towards his body, as opposed to tipping it or missing it entirely.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to bring that play back up. The thing I like about Aguilar is he's one of the few receivers, that Lamar's had where there seems to be ultimate trust. You know, you brought up like how I look at film and really comb through it. Like, Aguilar will get those should I throw it or not ball, where other guys won't.
Bateman won't get that.
Bateman won't get that. Boykin didn't get that. Any kind of – the tight ends get them. But when you're talking about wide receivers, Hollywood, there's trust chemistry. Nelson Aguilar has that kind of chemistry. And I like his role on this team. Like you said, he's wide receiver three, but he's really target number four, you know, and then you throw the running backs in there. But for Aguilar to get his three targets a game or whatever it is, you never know. It could be a big play like it was. What was it? It was the Dallas game. Where was that? Oakland or Vegas, where Aguilar had the big missed tackle and ran up
right, the sideline. 56-yard play. Yeah.
I mean, he's good. It seems like he's good for a couple of those too, because he does still have some speed.
Yeah. It definitely has something to contribute. And you know, the other thing I've liked him for is an extended play target for Lamar. I think he's been terrific in that regard. And Lamar really, really badly needed going into last year to have an extended portfolio of extended, sorry, a greater portfolio of extended time targets. So yes. He wasn't always throwing to Andrews, and Andrews target quality been really diminished by the fact that he was the bailout guy? And one of the things that really showed up in spades was how effective they were throwing the ball to the tight ends last year.
Right. Likely has that as well. Zay's pretty good at it. Bateman does not have it with Lamar. I think he's improved somewhat, but there's always some bad body language between the two of them. When, man, Bateman, if he would have just stayed up and realized you had space, Aguilar has that. So he's got some size, got some speed, off schedule player. I think that's wise for you to put him on this list and bring him up as a key piece to the offense.
Do you want to go to a couple of mailbag questions? Do you have anybody else you'd like to talk about first?
No, that's good. That's good to go. I don't have the mailbag up, so I think you're going to have to.
All right. I am going to it as we speak. By the way, thanks for contributing to this. And a lot of people ask me questions in a lot of different ways that I would like to respond to all of them. But if you send it to me in a direct message, it doesn't come up in the same way. I use TweetDeck and I have a hashtag film study mailbag column where all the questions are. And this is the natural bent. So if you can do it, just ask in regular Twitter, say, hey, I've been noticing blah, blah, blah. It can be a comment. It can be a question. Either way, we'll take it. But this is a good one. So A Bits, who had a good question on the defense, said, Ken, with four games now of information, I know it's still early. How would you evaluate EDC's offseason decisions made on the offensive line in terms of present, future, and how well they set themselves up in comparison to the rest of the league? As a really difficult question, because I don't think all the decisions have really been EDC's. I'll just start and I'll throw this out there that I think the decision to cut Stanley a year short, I think they actually may regret that decision, that it might have been nice to have the extra year of the contract, but probably on balance, it's fairly neutral. Linderbaum, there really wasn't a decision to be made, so it really comes down to the three new positions. Moses at right tackle, I think they just would have been deferring the decision a year, so they got a new right tackle. At right guard, it's really more a decision of Harbaugh than of EDC. So I think if Harbaugh is basically saying, no, we got Falele, we can use him at right guard, and EDC is saying we've got Ben Cleveland, but Harbaugh has the final say on the matter. I don't think it's EDC's decision that I can put on this. They went into the season knowingly being a little short at guard, but they also have to figure out where they can save money. And they decided offensive line was going to be the place this year. They had a chance. They could have re-signed Zeitler for another year. They could have stayed with Moses for another year. But my opinion is that they had to find a place to save money. And that's also going to be something they have to do next year. And it is going to freaking hurt.
It's really going to hurt. My opinion on this is I'm going to be a little more harsh on not keeping Zeitler, because I feel like you could, what was the number, Ken? 6 million?
About.
Right. So 1 year, 6 million to keep Zeitler, to me, I feel like you could always finagle a way to patch that up for 1 year. It wouldn't have been affecting the cap down the road. There could have been something in there, excuse me. And a shout out to A Bits. I always see him commenting, liking my posts. So shout out to you, really, at @Bolt_boast. Really appreciate him. So, Ken, my main thing is, look, whether it's Harbaugh, EDC, Ben Cleveland's been in the building for 3 years. You have to know that there's a chance that he could be, for no reasons, for off-the-field reasons, not be an option for you in Harbaugh's mind. Then you have Voorhees, who's never played a game, who's, kind of a gray beard for a rookie. Mm-hmm. So to me, if you're going to sign Derrick Henry and when you want to get your money's worth out of Derrick Henry, and if your franchise is Lamar Jackson, instead of having three new starters on the offensive line, I would have felt a lot better if that were two new starters on the O-line with Kevin Zeitler back. So
right.
I think overall, though, the rebuilding of the offensive line is a 2-year project, and the fact that they hit on Rosengarten is a really great sign. So hopefully this time next year, we can see a completely rebuilt line. Maybe they have two more pieces. And, A-Bits, my personal opinion on this is I'm looking at day two, maybe even round two, if not round three, on a guard. Or a tackle.
A guard, not a tackle.
Okay. Right. We can't compile another Tyree Phillips level I mean, he was a third rounder, but we can't compile another like mid rounder, a Sala or a Powers or a McCary type guy. We need somebody that can start, handle his own this year, and then possibly be a proven starter by the end of his contract type guy. So, you know, I'm completely cool with like using a second round pick on a non-premium position. You might get the second best guard in the draft at that spot.
Yeah. I could see that. Certainly if you find value there, it's one of several positions where they don't have to turn it down. But all the guys they have to try and sign this offseason after year three, they're candidates to draft that position. And they're guys that they need to consider. And so you've got the possibility that they're going to need a pass rusher. You got the possibility they're going to need interior defensive linemen. You always probably have some offensive line position you're looking to face. Mm-hmm. You're looking at offensive tackle, I think, again, and trying to figure out what they have. So I like the value approach, and I don't have any problem with a second round guard being the guy if that's the value position there is.
I'm just concerned with the loss of the late great Joe D. That we can't patch this up. And then you look at like Ken with Sala on the roster now, and you know, quite frankly, in my opinion, Faalele, we're getting way more out of him these last two games. He's playing better these last two games than he probably will the last 13. In my opinion, he's going to struggle.
I'm going to let myself be surprised by his play as it rolls out. And if he has a bad game, it's going to be time to move on, or a couple of bad games, it's going to be time to move on.
But if Ben Cleveland's gone next year. Like, you know, I just am thinking out loud here as far as like, we cannot have, you know, we can't just draft seventh round undrafted guys and have that be the answer. We're going to have some blue chip talent on this offensive line, a young offensive line that can grow together. That's kind of my opinion. Like, if we're going to scrape on something, how about the safety position or, you know, your run stuffing lineman or something like that. But when you're paying Lamar Jackson all that money, you best not have a weak offensive line.
That by the way, safety may be a position where a second or third round pick might be what you would need to pull the trigger on releasing Marcus Williams. Yeah. So they've certainly got a decision to make there. And he'd be one of the really hard decisions to make, because still he's not having a great year this year, but he's a lot of your defensive playmaking on the back end. He's your only real free safety. And I don't believe Eddie Jackson is fit for that role anymore. And I wouldn't want to waste Kyle Hamilton in it. So I think it's really him.
Right.
The Ravens would need to get another guy. They need to get another guy in the draft. And that becomes more of a challenge, and free safety talent. That's the skill set that is actually in high demand during that draft. Nobody wants a strong safety. Maybe they want a free safety.
Yeah, you get your strong safeties in the sixth round, undrafted.
Yeah.
You need to go higher for a free safety. But I think, you know, I know we're off to Abitz's question here, but, you know, with the shell coverage and less man-to-man, you can get away with maybe a Bo Braid, a Sanusi Kane in one of your safety spots and not really have a free safety anymore. Like, is it a dying position to play in the post and handle the whole back end by yourself? Like, first of all, there's not many guys that could do it. And second of all, the defenses aren't, you know, it's mostly cover two, cover three. So like with Eddie Jackson right now, for instance, Ken, I know he's brought in for his, like, you know, veteran smarts and not messing it up. But man, would I kind of like to see Bo Braid like hard charging in and blowing up these runs in the alley and these sweeps? Yeah, I would kind of like to see a young safety in there and give him a little responsibility to just stay in his half. We're not getting very good safety play, in my opinion, from either guy.
They're committed to the dime now. So it looks like they're going with that for a while until it really fails them. And I think if you want to get Bo Braid or Sanusi Kane in the dime, I'm all for it. I don't think you need to have Kyle Hamilton there. I think he can continue to play slot for you. I think he can even play deep on those downs. Right now they're playing Kyle Hamilton either at strong safety, mostly split field, or they're playing him at dime. They've cut off a lot of his slot corner, big nickel usage, because Humphrey has been so good.
Yeah, Humphrey's there, and they're trusting Wiggins more and more.
And you know, the other guy who's kind of been left out of the discussion here is Ardarius Washington, who's played great wherever they put him. I mean, he's been targeted 10 times this year for 29 yards.
He needs to play more. I mean, I mentioned Bo Braid, but Ardarius's instincts are off the charts.
Yeah.
Just a tremendous player of the game of football. You know, you have to be his size. to be on NFL field and be effective. He is just excellent at the game of football, at the football. Yeah. You know, if he was 6 foot, Ken, and 200, he'd be probably all pro. He's got that kind of like instincts and ran a 4.4. You know what I mean? If he was an athlete like that, he'd be an all pro.
You're already like limiting the pool so much that yes, I would agree with that, but he plays way bigger than he is.
Just a heck of a player.
Got another question here. Brad McGowan says, "Hey Ken, it's great. The right side of the offensive line looked good with a run heavy game script." He's actually talking about after the Dallas game, but did they do anything to make you feel more confident they can hold up if the Ravens need to go back to a pass heavy game come the future? He's basically saying, so basically this question is still valid, even though I don't think we got to it last week, but he they did benefit from a run heavy structure. The results were very different from two games that they did so. One of them, Fa'alele got a C, and he made a bunch of blocks in level two. The other game, Fa'alele did a really good job of pass blocking in the game. And he's not the only one. You know, obviously you had two different guys. You had Voorhees, who played in Dallas and didn't play in the second game. So I guess that the question doesn't necessarily apply to him. But we've got Rosengarten then, who came in. I think, you know, from the data points we have these last 2 weeks, I think I'm a pretty strong green arrow up in terms of what we're seeing from the left guard, right tackle group.
Yes. And I think, did Brad say the right side though?
He did say the right side. So he's not talking about Fa'alele. Sorry. He's not talking about Voorhees.
Yeah. From the right side, I would say Brad, Rosengarten. I think the, you know, I'm naturally kind of high and biased on him. As far as like his trajectory, I think he's going to develop very quickly. And we saw that in this past game. And I think also what helps Roger Rosengarten is the same thing that helped Orlando Brown, that helped any, right player playing right tackle for us, is that you don't want Lamar escaping to the right. I thought Kyle Van Noy did a great job on Josh Allen, for instance, containing him and not letting him, if he rolled right, he was headed backwards and right. So, the combination of Roger Rosengarten's natural feet and ability to move and mirror, combined with the player that he's blocking, can't go all out to come get Lamar. I think that's advantage Roger Rosengarten. I think he'll be excellent in that role. Fa'alele, I would say the pass blocking is going to be matchup dependent. So like Ed Oliver last week didn't get a chance to rush the passer a lot, but he's a good penetrating pass rushing defensive tackle. If the game script, if Buffalo was, a head and neck game and could rush Lamar, I think that Fa'alele would have had problems. But Mazi Smith from the Cowboys, for example, not a problem for Fa'alele.
Yeah, you're right. Size, pure size alone isn't the issue. It can be other things. Got one more question I want to get to before we get off. And this is an example. I'm sorry. Coyote 94 or Coyote 94, perhaps Kyote 94 from Reddit, asked a mailbag question. He said, "I'd like the discussion on cowardly decisions on fourth down calls from Harbs compared to previous years. My question is, do you think Harbs is avoiding going for it as much since he's avoiding variance and believes the team is more likely to win with less risks? If so, does that mindset actually pan out? I.e., does avoiding variance multiple times actually improve win probability, or does taking the right risks always average out and improve win probability?" I'm going to give a as fast an answer as I can to this, is that there's a bunch of people who are telling me I'm a complete idiot for the math of the thing. So I'll often get told I'm a complete idiot about football, but I almost never get told I'm a complete idiot about math. And I've got to admit that they might be right about this. I will entertain that prospect. But what I will say is the models which say you take every decision and always take a positive win expectation, I don't think hold up to a counterexample I can give to model results. So I can create a specific condition where the notion that you always take every 51-49 advantage is always the right call. And so I think there is something to be said for, if you don't know how many decisions you have to make during a game and you're the better football team, that you leave some gain on the table in the name of reduced variance. There is a guy from Wharton who's a professor at risk there, who called me out on this. He says, you're wrong. You know, it's a pure math thing. I say, even if it's two outcomes, it has a distribution. Even two outcomes. One outcome, I agree, it's just a risk thing. So if you always know it's the last decision of the game you're making, always take the higher value item. If you don't know, if you've got additional decisions to make, that's where you need to be more judicious about taking highly marginal decisions and the variance they cause. So try to be as clear as I can about that, Coyote. Appreciate the question. I give you that kind of answer because I think you're clearly demonstrating your background as a STEM guy from the way you asked the question. So the debate is there. I will say I could be wrong about this. I could be proved wrong, but I think I create a counterexample that says the model is not right to always do that.
There you go, Ken.
All right. I appreciate it. I don't mean to go on a soapbox for too long, but once in a while I've gotten that question, and I have an actuarial friend who's beating on me about it too. He says, Dan Reese, you know him,
yeah.
who thinks I'm wrong about it. I'll just say that I can create a counterexample for the people who say that the Ben Baldwin bot decisions always should be followed to the letter of the law kind of thing.
Right.
All right. Jason, always great talking football with you. So appreciate you coming on, spending, you know, almost 2.5 hours on my program. Please let me return the favor if you want to have me. Tell folks what's going on your channel.
Sure. Yeah. At Huddle It Up Films on Twitter, but Huddle It Up Films on YouTube. Doing, you know, 3 to 4 things a week. I do a few cut-ups a week, 2 or 3, and then a weekly show, a matchup show. As a draft guy, you know, Ken, that I'm familiar with the personnel throughout the league. Mm-hmm. I do my studying up. I watch my tape of the upcoming opponent, see what the personnel groups they favor, put that up. I got a spreadsheet where I put it up against what personnel groups we have, and we pick out some of the important matchups. My partner Yuri and I, and we've done really well with the matchups, the key matchups, the advantages on both sides. So we have a bouncing day for that, unfortunately. Yuri is on location out in the West Coast, a lot on his plate. So we don't have a steady day, but it's going to be on Thursday this week. If you subscribe, turn on your notifications, you'll always be able to see that show before the game on Sunday. It's either going to be Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. We're going to try to do that show. So that's my baby this season, and really excited about that.
All right. Outstanding. He's at Huddle It Up Films on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. Always a great one in terms of hearing new things, very engaged with the Twitter community as well. So if you ask him questions, I'm sure he'll get back to you. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear from you. Got a good new idea for a show that I think is really worth doing. And it does not take much. All I ask people, and we have a phone call about it, is basically give me 3 bullet points you want to say. Usually 3 bullet points of discussion between two people who are engaged and interested in the topic is probably 20 minutes right there. So what right. I say is don't get yourself in a bind where you feel like you need to over prepare for something like this. So trust me to help carry the conversation with you. And I think we'll always have a good time doing that kind of thing. Jason, appreciate you coming on again.
All right, Ken. Thanks so much, buddy.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.